Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
In just a moment, our celebration of spring continues as we journey to the land made famous by Katrina along the bayous of the Gulf. And then we finish our journey in the big woods of South Carolina when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wild Side News. Our journey and exploration of state parks across the United States this spring now takes us down to an area that not all that long ago was mainstream in the news, and this is in the New Orleans area. We're traveling to Bayou Saguenay State Park, which is in the New Orleans area, and now joining us to talk about what's happening in that park is Denise McKinney, who is the interpretive park ranger. Denise, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very, very good. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day today.
Tell me about what you do at Bayou Saguenay State Park.
Well, basically, I'm in charge of public programming. We have a lot of educational opportunities for our public, our schools, our Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, anybody who wants to listen, basically. We talk about wetlands and anything to do with nature, the wildlife, the trees, the flowers. Anything like that. We just take the opportunities to educate the public about some of these areas that haven't been torn down and houses built on, and just what we can do to help these animals and help this habitat, support it.
Well, you're a very lucky person. I miss my days as a field naturalist and interpreter. You get to go out every day and talk with people, and so therefore you have the opportunity to see what's going on. Tell us what you're noticing now that it's spring in Bayou Saguenay State Park that you think people would like to know about.
Well, right now, we're seeing a lot of flowers coming up. Of course, the Louisiana iris, which everybody loves to come and see, are coming out. We're seeing lots and lots of birds right now. I think the northern storms are keeping them here. We're seeing a lot of visiting birds, a lot of native birds, especially a lot of shorebirds, a lot of little songbirds. I'm just having a wonderful time with the birding here, so I'm going to do a lot of programs with birding. It is a little devastated because of all the tree damage. We lost thousands and thousands of trees, so it's going to take a while for all that to grow back. And I'm afraid it's going to give some of these Chinese tallow, which is an introduced species tree, a foothold, which is not a good thing, really. They're very fast-growing, very aggressive, and they take up some of the spots of all these nice cypress trees that we have out here and these beautiful live oaks.
Well, bayou is such a beautiful word, but a lot of people don't really quite grasp what a bayou is. Why don't you give us that interpretation?
Well, a lot of these bayous are basically the wetland areas, and these wetlands, there's all kinds of canals and waterways for fishing, and it's places where fish can come in, they spawn, there's places where shrimp come in. This is a native area where a lot of animals can come in and reproduce, and they're safe and protected by the marshes and the vegetation and the growth, and they have a better survival before they go out into the open areas. A lot of these canals are used by fishermen on a regular basis. A lot of boaters go out there. It used to be the only way of trappers and hunters to go back and forth before the main roads came in and the railroad system. And a lot of people used to get lost out here, and you'd have guides that would have to bring you through this area, and they'd bring boats back and forth just for these hunters. And so we have a lot of these wetlands over here. The wetlands slow up the storms that are coming inland and tearing down things. They collect some of the silt that's brought on by the waterways as they come rushing through. So they really protect us in a lot of ways.
Talk a little bit about the trees. So these are waterways that make their way and wend their way through. It's almost like a wetland forest, isn't it?
Oh, exactly. And the cypress trees, it's not as many cypress trees as they used to be. They're very slow growing, but they're very adapted to this wetland. And we just need to save the cypress tree. We need to get more cypress trees planted. We need to stop deforestating, getting rid of all these trees. We really need to keep them. They keep this land together. They keep the all the brush and all the other stuff together. They keep all this as solid land, and the more and more these big trees leave, the more the land gets washed away.
Now, because it's spring, I'm just curious, what kind of changes happen in an area like that that are different that may happen, for example, in a more northern climate?
Well, luckily in Louisiana, we can have a lot of trees here that stay green all year long. Especially like our what they call live oaks. It's because they're green all year long. They do lose leaves, but they don't lose them all at once, like a lot of the northern trees. So a lot of these trees will remain green during the winter. So a lot of people come down here and they're just overwhelmed by all the green in the middle of the winter. It doesn't get nearly as cold here. You'll notice that a lot of our animal species, for instance, are smaller because they don't need to have that body mass to keep warm. So like a lot of the, you know, the raptors, the great horned owls, and, you know, even the raccoons and stuff are a lot smaller here than they are up north because they don't need to protect themselves from that freezing weather.
That's an observation I'd never heard before. That's very interesting. That they literally, that's interesting. For park visitors who are coming, what in terms of nature, what is it that they seem to be most attracted to right now?
Birds. Birds are the big thing right now. We have lots of wading and shore birds, lots of egrets and herons. We actually have swallowtail kites around here. I've seen bald eagles. We have nesting pairs of bald eagles in the area. So birds are big time right now. And we're getting a lot of fruit on our plants right now. So the birds are eating those up. We have a lot of wildlife, possums, raccoons, coyote. I've even heard this bobcat out here yet. I haven't seen him yet. I've only been here a couple of months. But I have seen the coyote, this raccoon, like I said, armadillo, plenty of armadillos. All of those seem to survive the storm pretty well. Mm-hmm. A lot of reptiles right now. They're coming out. It's nice warm days. They're sunning.
Now, what kind of reptiles do you have in that area, in such a wet area?
Oh, all the major water snakes. The cottonmouth is our most venomous, probably, water snake, and probably the most aggressive. Everything else, we have brown-banded water snakes, broad-banded water snakes. There's just a large variety. We even have copperheads, which is, they'll hang around this area. They're not so close to the water, but they are in this area. A lot of speckled king snakes, corn snakes. We have a big variety of reptiles here.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of turtles, snapping turtles, common snappers, alligator snappers, red-eared sliders. There's a large variety of turtles. We have nutria, which is an introduced species, South American species. It's a large rodent. They were brought in for the fur trade, actually, but I don't think it really took off very well, even though the fur is a wonderful product. I think people just couldn't get over the idea of fur from a rat, per se. So
rat fur.
They are a problem, though. They do dig up canals and waterways that we depend on to keep the water out of New Orleans. So they are a constant problem there.
The image that you create is that it's really teeming with life.
It is. It's a very busy area. You have to be very observant, you know, because things can blend right in these woods. Even sitting right in front of you on a log, right on the water's edge, maybe a gator or a snake or something, and you may not even notice it right away until it decides to move.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of gators here. And, you know, hatchlings all the way up, you know, 13, 14 feet sometimes. So we have them everywhere.
Are you outside right now?
Yes, I am.
Uh-huh. Okay. Also, you've been at this park for only a couple of months, but that's because you moved over from the Audubon Science Institute, which is associated with New Orleans. Give us an update on what's happened, because there were so many stories coming out of particularly the zoo and the aquarium in terms of having to transfer animals, and it was a pretty scary moment. Tell us how things are progressing.
Well, the Audubon Nature Institute, I have been working there for, it was nearly 20 years, and I worked at the zoo. The Nature Institute is a big group of facilities. They have a breeding facilities for endangered species. They have a nature center. They have an aquarium, IMAX theater. They have some green space downtown New Orleans on the waterfront. So we have a lot of facilities. They had a lot of facilities. We did very well at the zoo when it comes to the animals. We had to remove the sea lions after the storm because of water quality issues, because the electricity was down for so long. So they're taking that opportunity to renovate the pool while they're gone. But most of our other animals stayed. We have staff that stayed on grounds. The biggest deal for us with the hurricane was trees. We lost lots and lots of trees, just like a lot of New Orleans, and especially in the east, lots of trees. So it's going to take many years for all those big mature trees to come back. The animals did very well. The aquarium didn't fare as well because of life support systems. We were without electricity for long term. There were some problems with some generators. And, you know, it's a learning thing. Every time you have a storm like this, everybody learns what's best to do. So, you know, things are being improved. Anything we can do to improve has been done. We have a very knowledgeable staff that stayed on grounds, animal staff, mechanical staff, everything. So we did really well there.
On a more regional basis, you're a naturalist. You probably get a chance to hear stories and travel around that whole region. How's the region doing?
In my point of view, it was very depressing when we didn't have as much greenery because I stayed for the hurricane, and right after it was total silence. You couldn't hear a bug. You couldn't hear a bird. Everything was totally brown. You know, everything had turned brown from all the leaves being ripped off the trees, and it took a while for all that green to come back. And when the green started coming back, that really changed the spirits, at least for me. You know, anybody that works outside and they start seeing green, it's new life, you know, because they expected a lot of this stuff to die, you know, with the influx of the salt water and, you know, all the chemicals and stuff. And, you know, it's really, really hardy. If it wasn't for the trees breaking, it's doing fairly well. I mean, we're still losing trees. I mean, every day you might find another tree fallen just from the damage. But it is coming back. It's just going to take a very long time. And I think now with all these dead trees, you're going to have a lot more rotting wood, a lot more nest cavities. You know, you can look positive, too. You have a lot more nest cavities, a lot more bugs and insects eating that wood, you know, things that eat wood, you know, some of the beetles and things, and their larvae depend on that. A lot of that is going to bring birds in, you know, because if there's more bugs, there's more birds. If there's more nest cavities, there's more birds, you know, places for these animals to hide. So now that it's starting to turn green, it's coming back. You know, the animals are going to come back. They're coming back very well. I'm really surprised at the number of birds I've been seeing because I was a little concerned about them not having enough food, you know, once they got here. And the residents seem to fare well, too. I think they knew to get away and come back. So it seems like it's doing okay. It could have been worse.
That's a terrific update. I'll let you get back to the joys of being a naturalist. I want to thank you, Denise McKinney, the interpretive park ranger at Bayou Saguenay State Park in Louisiana. Thanks so much for adding your voice here on the Wild Side News.
All right. Thank you very much for calling.
Okay. Thanks. Now we finish our journey back east as we head into the wild country of the Mountain Bridge Wilderness Area that is part of the South Carolina State Park System. State parks are really a gift to all of us. They are in every state in the nation, and sometimes it's a little difficult to get out to the grand parks, the national parks, but literally in our backyards and in our communities, we're blessed to have all of these terrific state parks, and that's what we're really focusing on today. We're now heading off to South Carolina and the Mountain Bridge Wilderness Area and talking with Tim Lee, park naturalist. Tim, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you.
Well, Tim, first of all, you work with the Mountain Bridge Wilderness Area. That's quite an extensive zone and actually covers a variety of different state parks.
That's correct. The Mountain Bridge Wilderness Area, which is located at the northwestern corner of South Carolina, consists of Caesar's Head Natural Area, Jones Gap State Natural Area, and Wildcat Wayside State Natural Area. Combined area of about 11,000 acres.
That's big, and it's also quite a varied area.
Yes, it is. Everything from topography here at just over 1,000 feet above mean sea level to over 3,500 feet above sea level.
Mostly treed, or what's the mixture?
Predominantly forested area. There are seven different types of forest communities here, including, you know, oak hickory forest, and a forest type that's a little bit more rare here in the eastern United States. It's called a mountain cove forest, which is really known for its species richness or its diversity. So there's really no one plant that identifies it, but it's really more that species richness. Beautiful areas.
When people come out to your park, what are they most likely to notice because it's spring? What's going to really stand out for them?
Well, right now, probably one of the things that stands out most in the spring here is going to be our spring wildflowers, the spring ephemeral. There are over 600 different plant species in the park. Many of them are flowering. And at this time of year, there's just a variety of colors, shapes, and patterns that really catches the visitor's eye. And as well, migratory songbirds. A lot of the migratory songbirds, like black-throated blue warblers, Louisiana water thrush, hooded warblers, many of those spring migrants are coming back. So the forest is kind of filled with song right now.
It's rather interesting, as I'm talking to different parks, the spring is coming in many fashions. In late April, where does that put you in the spring bloom? Where are you in that emergence of spring?
We're a little past halfway here at the lower elevations. But remember, you know, here in the Mountain Bridge at 1,100 feet above sea level, a lot of things have bloomed out, and we're probably about halfway through the blooming season. But by the time you get to the higher elevations in the wilderness area, above 3,000 feet at Caesar's Head, we're a little bit more delayed. We're about a two-week difference in bloom time from the base of the mountain, top of the mountain. So spring's kind of moving its way up the mountain.
What stands out in your area in terms of some wildflowers?
Gosh, I'm probably pretty biased, but some of the wildflowers that are the showiest right now, the brightest colors, the interesting patterns, are a lot of the trilliums, Catesby trilliums, Bassie's trilliums, Wake Robin trilliums, and then several other species of flowering shrubs or bushes, if you would. Things like our mountain laurels and rhododendrons, both Carolina or shortleaf rhododendrons, are blooming, and the rose bay will be starting to bloom in a couple of weeks. But I would say the mountain laurels, Carolina rhododendrons, the trilliums are probably the most showy right now.
Now, I know the trilliums in various parts of the country come in different colors. Is that the case in your area as well?
It is, very much so. The Catesby trillium starts out white, fades to a pink. The Bassie's trillium is a deep burgundy, and occasionally you'll get white ones. And the mountain sweet Betsy, or Doce trillium, you can have yellow coloration to deep purples.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about your wildlife and what you're noticing in terms of their welcoming the new spring.
A lot of activity with the birds once again. Birds carrying nesting material, but some have actually already have young and are carrying food back to their nests. And many of them are you know, really starting in there early in that breeding season. So there's a lot of song out there, a lot of the males singing and establishing territory out there. Animals are becoming a little bit more active in terms of we're seeing a lot more signs of snakes. We're seeing things like garter snakes, corn snakes. We did see our first timber rattlesnake of the season a couple days ago.
Keep your eyes open, right?
Keep your eyes open. They are starting to move around a little bit. So the wildlife is definitely becoming active out there.
Obviously, you have lots of bear.
We do have black bear here in the park. The estimated population on black bear here in the mountains of South Carolina is about 900 bear. That's fairly conservative, but they are starting to move around a little bit. We're starting to see some signs.
And I imagine cougar and bear, bobcat as well?
We do still have bobcat in the state of South Carolina. However, there has not been a documented mountain lion and or cougar report in the state of South Carolina that has been documented since actually for about three decades now. So probably an animal that's now missing from our forest.
Okay, well, this is the stuff we need to know, because some areas they're talking about how they're hearing them, you know. And
yes, sure.
It's such a terrific diversity. Give us a little bit of history for you as a naturalist. How long have you been with the park system?
I've been with the park system. Actually, I've been here at the Mountain Bridge my entire career so far with the Park Service. I've been here for just a little over 7 years. Prior to that, I was a naturalist just one valley away over in the state of North Carolina in the headwaters of the Green River for a private organization. So I've been a naturalist here in this part of South Carolina for just a little over 10 years now.
Now, in terms of the park complex that defines itself as Mountain Bridge Wilderness, let's talk a little bit about opportunities for people to visit, camping and things.
Most of the visitors who come to the Mountain Bridge, because it is a designated wilderness area, are people who are coming in to experience, have that natural experience, if you would. There's just over 55 miles of hiking trails, everything from easy to very strenuous, depending upon how long it is, how much elevation change you're going to make. So a lot of hiking opportunities. We do have primitive backpack camping sites that are spread throughout the Mountain Bridge. We have a wild population of trout and our stream systems here. There's three major streams that a lot of trout fishermen come out to fish in, and a lot of photography opportunities, once again, with those wildflowers and songbirds, and just those natural settings associated with the waterfalls and the streams. So a lot of hiking, backpacking, fishing, and photography takes place here.
You're so lucky to be a naturalist because you get to go out and be paid to wander through the wonder. I'm just curious now, when you have some time that's yours and you decide that you want to head to one of your favorite spots, what are you looking for?
Pretty much when I head out to my days off, a lot of times I actually head out here in the Mountain Bridge, go hiking, or there's several other areas that are close by to us, like Tuscan National Forest. I'm not too far from the Great Smoky Mountains either. So most of my time off is spent in the woods, either hiking or you know, river systems, kayaking, and so we're looking for that, like most of our visitors here, I'm looking for that natural experience out there.
We've been talking with Tim Lee, who's the park naturalist with the Mountain Bridge Wilderness Area in South Carolina. Tim, thanks so much for lending your voice here on the Wild Side News.
Thank you, sir.
As spring blooms across America, keep in mind that it is doing exactly the same thing in all natural areas in the Northern Hemisphere, just as it's heading into fall in the lands down under. This miracle of life is a gift, and as we take our efforts to deal with climate change onto the global stage, be sure to always reach a handout to help our natural world make that journey as well. This is our best hope now to begin to restore the wonder that has been so ravaged over the last 100 years. Keep listening to the Wildside News, and next week, the Weekly Earth Summit, and we will make this journey together. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios until we meet again next week or any time on the archives when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wildside News.